Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we'll be talking about in this episode are the top 300 comic book sales for November 2011 as sold through Diamond to comic book retailers. We're in the third month of the new 52. This is the third month in a row DC has had the top percentage of the unit sales for the top 300 comics. If they do that again next month, not only will that be the longest record of consecutive months in a row they've done it, which, frankly, this month has been and last month has been during the final order era, because they never had it twice in a row. They only had the lion's share of the unit sales four times before the new 52. So if they can do it again next month, that'll be, you know, having the new 52 will have doubled the number of times they've done that. So yay, DC. And I know that's not their goal, but I think it's really good that they're doing that. They sold, from the estimates I've got, over 3 million units, not just through the new 52, but all-encompassing, with 43.21% of the total units for the top 300. Marvel had 40.84% of the total units. However, since Marvel had some more expensive items, Marvel had a top price of $7.99, DC had a top price of $4.99. The average price at DC was $3.08, whereas at Marvel it was $3.61. So Marvel had the lion's share of the sales by dollars for the top 300, with 45.11% versus DC's 38.85%. But obviously you can kind of goose those numbers with just how you set your prices. But both of those publishers, you know, again, by units, only a couple of percent apart, both around, again, that 40 to 43%, which I think is, you know, it's good for them to be kind of that even. I really like it better than when there's a 10 or 15% gap between them or something. But between those two, that's 84.06% of the unit sales for the top 300, leaving less than 16% for everybody else to fight over. And of course, once you take out Image, Dark Horse, and IDW, the other premier publishers, that's another 9.19% of the total unit sales for the top 300, meaning there's really only about, you know, 6.75% of the unit sales for the top 300 go into the back half of previews. And in terms of the number of units, that's still, you know, not quite 500,000 units, but 472,894 units, which is a lot. But out of the 7 million plus units, you know, it's it puts it into perspective. And that's part of why it's really tough for the guys in the back half of previews to kind of compete. Although some of them can do so fairly well. Dynamite, really, their unit sales were less than 100 units, really almost about an estimated 70 units behind Dynamite. Or IDW, I mean, sorry, that was Dynamite that's only so far behind. So, I mean, Dynamite, as they have been, you know, getting a couple of good properties and so forth, I've always thought Dynamite and Boom had the potential, out of all the other publishers in the back half, of eventually getting to that premier status. Dynamite certainly running neck and neck with IDW, and neither of those two are that far behind Dark Horse, only about 3,000 units or so. So kind of interesting how all that's breaking down. I am unsure if DC is going to have the top percentage next month or not. It's going to be interesting just to see how the new 52 does next month. Last month, of course, stellar sales, because not only were all the number twos on the list, but all the number ones still were. This time, we're really not seeing that kind of reorder activity for DC. We are seeing some, and what we are seeing is really kind of interesting. Matter of fact, almost all of the reorder activity on the list this time is DC. The one item that is not is some reorder activity in rank 295 for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Ongoing number 1 of 4,377 units. But that, that first shipped in August, so I'm assuming that's legit reorder activity then. That's kind of interesting. That seems a little high. But the
reorder activity is what's accounting for the total number of items that they're showing on the list for DC being so high, right? I mean, because they're showing that they've got 80, well, it says new items.
Yeah.
81 new items.
That's my point. The 5 reorder activity for DC, Detective Comics number 2, Batman number 1, Swamp Thing number 2, Animal Man number 2, and Aquaman number 1.
I didn't realize they were putting out that many books. I mean, because there's obviously the new 52. They got like 5 or 6 other things. I guess then they've got all the Vertigo stuff, the DC Kids stuff, their licensed video game stuff that's still coming out, and TV stuff.
Let's see. Once we wipe out the number 2 or the number 3s out of that list, they still have like 34 items. Now, some of those are issue number 2s of like Huntress, Batman Odyssey, Legion Secret Origin, Shade, Penguin Pain and Prejudice, Spaceman and My Greatest Adventure, and Supernatural. So
I guess the Justice League combo pack is coming up different than the regular Justice League.
Yeah, and that one's actually kind of interesting. This time it's sold under 10,000 units, and it really goes towards DC's point that they're seeing the digital audience as additive and not cannibalizing the print audience. And I think this really goes to show that, given how high the regular copy of Justice League number 3 sold, you know, instead of 10,000, it actually sold 158,687. And that's people who bought just the print. Again, add that other almost 10,000, it was actually 9,978. So between the two, I mean, that boosts that print sales of that other one, at least to retailers, up to 168,665 units. But only a small fraction of that is the combo pack. Whereas if people were using this to potentially shift over or whatever, we might be seeing stronger sales there. On this list, realistically, if they're going digital, they're not going through this list anyways. This is only the people who are trying to get both copies. So the double dipping seems minimal.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the other things we have here are some of the Vertigo titles, things like the DC Universe Online Legends. So we've got, let's see, Unwritten, Hellblazer, iZombie, Sweet Tooth. We've got some of the other, what was Johnny DC with Tiny Titans, Young Justice, the Green Lantern animated series, and The Brave and the Bold. And then again, some other Vertigo, Northlanders, Uncharted, Scallop, Diablo, DMZ. I mean, they have quite a few things that are outside the DC Universe. But it's one of those things that because they've really pushed that new 52, they've got a lot of things beyond those 52 titles. So I could see where you were a little surprised by how much they
have. Yeah, I mean, I saw that number and I'm like, really? They have that many books? Because, you know, it's all 52 this, 52 that. And it's like, yeah, you come back and you start looking at it and it's, well, they got quite a few other things to offer.
Yeah.
But it does kind of get lost in the marketing hype of the new 52.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was reading somewhere online where somebody had commented, and it might have been in response to Brian Hibbs's column in November about, you know, how he had said, and again, I could be wrong on the details, but I'm pretty sure this is how it went down, how he had said that, you know, some of the new 52 titles, as one would expect, not all of them are going to be hits, they're going down, but they all got a fair shake. And in the comments, somebody is like, well, how could they have all gotten a fair shake? Some of them got lost in the shuffle. Well, yes, and certainly some of them got promoted more than others. There's no question about that. But by putting all 52 number ones out at the one time, it got people looking over that entire list of the new 52. So I do think if they had dribbled them out, you know, a couple each month or whatever, it would have been, oh, there's just a couple of more number ones by, you know, a couple of months in versus here. I think they all did have not exactly even footing, but a much better spotlight than they otherwise would have.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we're seeing what appears to be some drops at this point, but really, with a third issue, you're in the honeymoon period of a title anyways. I think that is, in this case, compounded by 52 honeymoon periods going on concurrently, plus a few more titles introduced after that, plus all this whole digital kind of big question mark and stuff. So really, I'm hesitant to kind of say, well, you know, this is a... reluctant to make any huge, you know, pronouncements as to how this is or isn't doing for DC, because it's... I really think a lot of this is in a huge state of flux. It is just kind of staggering how much change they introduced all at once. I think it is doing well for them. And this time around, we hit, 2,644,222 units sold for the new 52. Which, really, you know, for third issues, not bad. Even the lowest selling of these is over 20,000 units. That's better than they'd been doing before. A lot of these are over the 30,000 units. A couple of these are, I mean, the top selling one, again, that Justice League... You know, over 168,000 if you include the combo pack. Even without it, on over 158,000. Batman's doing over 150,000, almost 151,000. I mean, that's close enough, depending how accurate these estimates are. It may well have done, and certainly will by the time reorders are factored in. So having five things, you know, above the 100,000 mark, although Detective is very close to it, that's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting, though, that you've got that Flash at 90,410, so about 10,000 units below the Detective. And then from there, you've got this really odd gap between it and Batman the Dark Knight at 78,234 units. There seems that there is this, I don't want to say this no man's land, this void in the 80,000s, but that's an area that often is just empty. There's stuff that sells below it and above it, but not as often do you see things kind of in the thick of it. And I know that must mean something to, for some reason, I just don't know what. But compared to how a lot of these titles, or their equivalent titles, I should say, had been selling before, it's still looking very positive, I think, for DC.
Now, when are the return, I mean, because they prorated a lot of these numbers, mm-hmm. to allow for returns. So when the returns start flowing in, that should not cause numbers to go down, right?
The way the reporting is, numbers basically by definition cannot go down, because at least the numbers we see. Because the bottom of this list is 4,330 units. So we're not going to see any negative sales ever post. It's the list, one, doesn't go that low, and two, they don't really post those. So what they have done is they, like you said, had prorated these for returns. Now, if they get to the point where suddenly the, you know, that doesn't happen or whatever, they adjust upwards. If they need to adjust those sales upwards, those would show up as if they were reorder. Does that make sense?
Right, yes. I just want, because I know that my local shop, you know, I was in and he was talking about having sent in some huge box of covers of unsold DC stuff where he was going to get a couple of $1,000 of credit, you know, and maybe even get like a whole week's worth of books, you know, for the shop that he wouldn't have to pay for. Returns are happening.
Oh yeah. But again, they've been factored in. I think these sales, I mean, they did the same thing with the first 3 months of the weekly books they were doing. Trinity, Countdown, 52. And what had happened is those were reported at a 20% rate discounted because they could return up to 20%. And then it all kind of came out in the wash or whatever down the line. And that's why at about issue 13 of those, it looked like it jumped up 20%, when really it didn't. They just stopped, you know, the reduced reporting. Similar sort of thing is going on here. It's a bit different just in terms of the scope of it. But that's part of why I don't want to look at these and say, oh, wow, these things are all dropping by X percent. Because, again, we don't have really all the information. And when I hear about a shop returning enough to get a week's worth of comics for free, on the one hand, I'm thinking, wow, that's kind of interesting. But, I mean, really, that's a good thing for everybody. It's certainly good for the shop. it's good for all the customers at the shop because they had the opportunity to be getting those comics, which means it was good for DC. DC has done a really good job attempting to saturate the market without oversaturating it, but have copies out there that if people want to go buy it, they can. And as a fallback position for that, they're going to have potentially stronger sales on ongoings because if you miss an issue and really want to get the story, you do have the option of that digital copy, you know? So it's not like you've got to drop the book because you missed an issue of Blackhawks or whatever and you're never going to be able to find it because the one shop in your town didn't have it. Now, not to say people will go to the digital, but that's at least on the table now. So I really think the New 52 is a huge game changer. I think we're still trying to understand and figure out how that's changing the game, I guess is the point. But I mean, 3 months in, they still have, you know, five titles above the 100,000 mark. You look at the beginning of the year where that Flash at 90,000 may well have topped the list by a decent margin or something. This is much better sales than we're seeing now at the end of the year, or near the end of the year, because this is November sales we're looking at, versus what we saw back in January.
Right.
So it's really, I think, a positive sign there. It's also going to be interesting to see come May, when the New 52 Volume 1s come out on the trade side, how do those stack up? Do we see this kind of interest reflected over there? Do we see that kind of muted because people have been picking up the digital? Don't know. It really throws a lot of the previous sales trend patterns and stuff out the window, and we're looking to see how the new ones shape up, which is fun. Let's see. The other one that's kind of interesting is at rank 5 here. We've got the top-selling Marvel item, which I would not have picked this one, so I'm a bit surprised. It is the .1 number one issue at, 113,343 units.
There was some kind of shenanigans with that issue that I was meaning to ask you about, because they double-shipped it, but
they massively overshipped it.
Charge the shops for the extra books? They gave them to them for free or something? I mean, I don't know, because there were a bunch of shops that just sold it for cover price, mine included. But then I was hearing lots of people saying, oh, yeah, their shop was selling it for $1 or, you know, $2 or something, even though it has a $5.99 cover price, because they essentially got all these extra copies that they didn't really have to pay for.
Now, I'm not sure if this includes the overshipping or not. And in the past, the way Diamond has reported things along these lines has kind of been inconsistent over the years, and they're always improving and working towards a better way and fairer way to report it. But if you remember back 10 years or so ago, I forget exactly how long, we got the 10-cent adventure for Batman and Superman, the 9-cent issue of Fantastic Four and things like that. Those were clearly promotionally priced, and they kind of, you know, put an asterisk and didn't count them as part of the rankings and stuff like that. Which makes sense. I mean, those things were not selling along the lines of a $2.99 or whatever the current cover price, $1.99 or whatever it was at the time. Because again, they're a tenth the price or whatever. It's for a dime, I'll pick up damn near anything. As Amazon has proved on their marketplace this past 10 days with some of their 10-cent apps. With this, my understanding, the way Diamond puts out this list, this reflects what was sold, invoiced to retailers. Now, if Marvel overshipped and it was just, hey, it's a bonus copy, they shouldn't have been invoiced for those extra copies, or maybe technically they were invoiced but not charged. It comes down to kind of how the hairs get split on some of this, and honestly, I don't know the answer. And I'm assuming at this point that they are including the overship, because I cannot imagine this doing.
I find it hard to believe that shops ordered $113,000 of a $5.99 Marvel book.
I'm not sure I would necessarily believe they bought half that. Yeah. I mean, this seems really high. But again, it was heavily promoted, so half that, double it for the overship. This is potentially how we get here. So, I mean, again, I'm very surprised the .1 topped the list for Marvel and did it by, 1,200 units over the next best-selling thing, which was that Avenging Spider-Man number 1 with 112,144 units. That, to me, seems like legit sales. But you're right. The .1 stuff, particularly at the $5.99 cover price, I think they kind of, Marvel kind of goosed the numbers there with how they overprinted and overshipped. That has been done, not like this, but similar shenanigans have happened in the past. The Cowboys and Aliens graphic novel, or trade paperback, or whatever graphic novel, I guess, that Platinum came out with back in 06, I think it was. Apparently, they had done a promotional deal with some retailers that kind of involved them buying copies of the graphic novel with the promotional money so it would go through Diamond and bump the numbers. And there was some major, you know, ethical questions around that. I'm not saying that's what happened here, because again, if Marvel just gave them away, but really it kind of comes down to, you know, Diamond is purporting this to be a list of what's sold. And if they're putting what's invoiced but not paid for, to me that seems not right.
Well, I mean, just that, you know, if they've doubled the number on point one, I mean, that's like about $330,000 of sales is being, you know, suspiciously reported. I just find it, again, it's like if shops, because they did double ship it, right? That's what I had heard. I just find it hard to believe that there's 226,000 copies of this kicking around, you know, that seems like a lot.
That's my point. I think this has to include the double ship number, right? Yeah,
this is the double ship number. Which
now, any retailers listening, please chime in. Send me an email. Let me know. Post in the forum, whatever. Because one of the things that I think makes the episodes we do here unique, the articles I do for CBR and stuff, is you know, Bob's certainly not in the comic industry. I'm not in the comic industry. We've got this outside vantage point. Which I think gives us a lot more of an unbiased viewpoint. Not to say that Milton Greep over at ICV2 is biased or that John Jackson Miller is biased. I don't think they are. They're very upfront, honest guys. I ton of respect for them. But Milton Greep used to run Capital City. He's got a lot of insider information and I think a lot of contacts with behind-the-scenes stuff. Same with John Jackson Miller, who used to work over at Comic Book Comics Buyer's Guide.
Yeah.
Blanket on that. And works as a writer for some of the Star Wars properties over at Dark Horse and stuff like that. So they're coming at it from a very different vantage point than I am, and they may well know the answer to some of these things. I'm looking at it more from a reader perspective, and as a reader, I got the same reaction you had. Really? This much? You've got to be kidding me. And I see the same posts in a lot of cases that you are, and it's like, yeah, this seems like shenanigans to me. So, whereas again, that Avenging Spider-Man, I see those as very believable, legitimate sales. And I personally do not believe the free digital copy or whatever had any influence on those numbers whatsoever. Now, going forward, they very well might. But I think that's even kind of unlikely. I mean, I have downloaded the second issue, although I read the print version, so I don't really need the digital, but it's like, well, what the hell, it's free. I really think that what Marvel's doing on Avenging Spider-Man, upcoming with the Ultimate titles, is a counterpunch to DC going day-and-date digital and charging extra, like on that Justice League, for the combo pack. They're trying to make it seem like Marvel's the better deal there.
Or are they also, you know, just to be able to say, you know, this is, well, nobody's actually, I don't think anyone's going to be reporting real digital sales numbers, so they can kind of say whatever they want to say, I guess. But,
well, I mean, DC,
you know, is Marvel
going to
be using that as, you know, kind of fuel for, you know, highest circulation digital comics out there because they're giving them away for free? And
it's a good point. It changes the bar. Whether it raises or not, we may never know. I mean, DC reported their top 10 digital sellers, and I think that's fine and good, and I applaud them for doing that. DC has actually been very open and forthright with information with the new 52, and I really applaud that and appreciate that. But they give here's the top 10. And as Chris and I were talking on the trades episode, I see a world of difference between a top 10 that each one is off by like a unit or two versus each subsequent item on the list is off by an order of magnitude or two. You know, this month, the number two item on the comic list, Batman number three, sold 150,972 units. Because of that ranking stuff, we can see it's about, you know, Justice League sold about a little over 5% more. We can do a relative ranking there. We have had times in the past where the number one item sold twice what the number two item did. And with no relative ranking, well, it's a number one, it's a number two. One sold better than two, but by how much? And, you know, your point there was essentially, when are we ever going to get, if ever, that kind of real numbers, and I put real in quotes, to have that kind of relative ranking. And until we get that, I mean, I'm going to find those digital sales lists mildly interesting, but not something I'm really going to be able to use for any number crunching purposes. Because there's no numbers to crunch.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we've seen just over the course of this year, what's number one, 1 month versus another month, wildly different. This is 60, 70,000 units higher of a number one than we had back in January. So not all number ones are remotely created equal.
Right.
But I think you've got a very interesting point of if, by giving away stuff like Avenging Spider-Man, that almost de facto makes it the best-selling digitally available comic, or however they choose to parse the terminology.
Yeah, hopefully they wouldn't use the word selling since they're not actually selling it, or maybe they countered as a sale because somebody paid for that comic book.
I think that's a...
And it was an intrinsic part of it, so some amount of the cost there, so they did sell it. You know, theoretically, you have to buy the comic to get that code.
It's all open to interpretation, and what they write thinking means one thing, we would read thinking means something else, potentially. Because if you go back to the Comixology being the top grossing app on 9 consecutive Wednesdays or some such. How'd it do Thursday? How'd it do Tuesday? Maybe it did wonderful. I hope it did. But based on what they actually say and what people read out of that, you got to pay attention to the details. All right. Another one that's kind of interesting. We talked about the item at rank 15 on the Weekly Comic Spotlight. That's Fantastic Four, number 600. This sold 73,803 units. That is up a little over 8.25% from the previous issue of that title, which, of course, was 588, which was the silent issue after the death of Johnny Storm in 587. Of course, there was about a $4 price difference between those
issues. Were you making air quotes when you said death of Johnny Storm?
Yes, I should have, and I wasn't. I'm sorry. Yeah. The death of the credibility of the death of Johnny Storm. How about that? I don't know. Fair point.
Oh. Can't believe Tom Brevoort? Say it ain't so.
Say it ain't so. It ain't so. I stopped taking some of what he said as truly believable around the time he was going through the convention circuit in San Diego and Chicago saying, Civil War number 4 will ship on time. And about 4 weeks later, or actually less, I think it was 3 from Chicago, within the final order cutoff period, it's going to be about 2 months late. And that, of course, had the ripple effect. It's like, how could he have not known at that point it was going to be? Anyways, he's got some credibility problems with me at times. Nice guy. Seems like a great guy. Has some good information on his blog at times. But, you know, when you've got to toe the company line, apparently, at times, and, you know, spin doctor, whatever. Yeah. Anyways, this issue of Fantastic Four 600 was $7.99. Their top-priced comic.
Which is another thing that's going to be skewing the dollar amounts. I mean, just between the extra money they made off of that Fantastic Four and the .1 shenanigans, it goes a long way to making up that dollar gap between Marvel and DC.
That's why when I rank the publisher breakdown, I do it by units.
Yeah.
You know, a unit is a unit is a unit. Can you goose the numbers by selling it at 10 cents? Certainly. Can you tank it by selling it overpriced? Yes. But... you know, you can, again, like you said, the way you can skew the dollar rankings here is insane. I'm sure somebody out there is thinking, well, yeah, but if they price it too high, they lose the sales, the all that math works out. Yeah, but people were going to buy Fantastic Four 600 that were going to buy Fantastic Four 600. There is a certain contingent of the audience where that that inelasticity of the price or whatever it was that Marvel Edge experimented with at one point. Frankly, it's true. The price at which I would not have bought Fantastic Four 600 has yet to be determined, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Which is sad. What's interesting, though, is down at rank 39 is FF number 12, which is the subsequent issue of really what had, the issue that led into Fantastic Four 600, which was FF 11. 49,445 units, which is actually up a little over 2% from its previous issue. But, man, big difference there between FF and this issue of Fantastic Four. And really, when they went over to the FF, we talked about it in the Weekly Comics Spotlight where we reviewed Fantastic Four 600. These shenanigans they've been doing of the renumbering, the retitling, and all that stuff have bumped up the sales. Pretty much this issue of Fantastic, or of FF, I should say, I'd have to go double check the numbers going back, but I think it may be the only one that came close to, or may have sold less than, any issue of Fantastic Four that Hickman had done, other than his first or something. I mean, bottom line, the shenanigans have worked, which, you know, I get, but it does kind of bother me. I'd rather people be picking this stuff up because they know it's a good story, not because they were, I don't know, tricked into getting it or something of the sort. Yeah, I mean, that's what it comes down to. By doing these marketing things, they have, over the course of this year, successfully boosted the sales. Because really, other than that first issue 570 of Fantastic Four, which did, I'm going to say, around 60,000 units. Let me go actually pull up the Excel version of this. Hang on. That first volume did 62,335 estimated units. 571 did 47,432 units. So even with this issue of FF selling at 49,000, it still sold better than any issue of Fantastic Four prior to the shenanigans with 587 and 588 and 600 now are really the only post shenanigan ones.
And you know, that's the job of the marketing guys, is to increase the sales. So, you know, given that comics fans seem to be obviously vulnerable to this kind of business, I can't really blame the companies for taking advantage of it, because you know, you always say, well, they should just tell a good story, you know? Well, you know what? When they just tell a good story and they keep the numbering the way it is and they don't do all this kind of stuff, people don't buy it. You know, yeah. When they have an event, when they do some crazy stunt, when they do these other things, it's, you know, jumping around saying, look at me, but it works and people buy it in, you know, staggeringly greater numbers. I mean, not staggeringly, but at least greater enough numbers that it makes perfect sense to keep on doing it. And, you know, as long as the fans respond to that kind of stuff, they're going to keep doing it.
Well, I mean, close to twice as many people picked up FF number one as picked up the first issue of Hickman's run on Fantastic Four. That says something right there, the power of the number one. And to me, what makes the shenanigans successful is not that the death issue or that first issue of FF sold so much better than Hickman's run on Fantastic Four, but that every issue of FF since then sold better than all but the first issue of his run on Fantastic Four.
Well, it's been good stuff, and people actually tried it, right?
Yeah.
That was the sticking point for them. They could not get people to physically try the stuff out.
Yeah, but they still lost a ton of readers between the death issue of Fantastic Four and the final issue. Got many of them, but not all of them back for that first issue of FF, and then lost again another 40, 50,000 of them for that second issue. And that's just from issues that went into retail stores, not all of which sold, of course. You know? But given the relative strength of the title after that, I've got to assume that it quickly kind of got to a status quo sales level in many stores. But I guess my point is I consider it the success not because of the flash in the pan sales for one or two issues, but the fact that it sustained better sales.
Right.
Because you look back at some of the shenanigans publishers have pulled, the promotional power rings for Blackest Night are a great example. I thought it was a brilliant promotional thing. And it doubled, tripled, quadrupled, and in one case even quintupled, I believe, sales of a title for that issue.
Yeah, and then, but nobody stuck with it, right?
Nobody stuck with it. And you know, I get that. I understand that. But it's still kind of disappointing, particularly since some of those I thought were really strong titles.
But the difference there, I think, was you were pulling people into a title that they didn't want to read necessarily for a single issue to get a promotional item, as opposed to making a number one with, you know, Hickman and Steve Epting. You know, someone might say, oh, I like Jonathan Hickman's writing. He's an architect. You know, I'd like to check that out, you know, whatever. And it maybe made sense, right, that the people, if you can get them onto it for a reason like that, it's going to be a different result than if you're just getting somebody to come on to get some tchotchke.
Well, and I think also coming in for a first issue to sample it, you're right. There's a certain acknowledgement on the reader's part that I am potentially interested in this, and therefore they are more open to getting the title. That's a given. I completely agree with that. I think also those issues they gave the power rings out for, I don't know that they were written specifically for the goal of, hey, we have an opportunity here. We're going to have people in the door. Are we going to be able to actually keep them? And I don't know how many stores ordered extra copies for the sole reason of selling the power rings versus the comic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you go down to rank 108, we've got Legion of Secret Origins number 2, which is at 22,433 units with a 41.35% drop from the first issue.
That would be a good title. You said Legion of Secret Origins. Legion of Secrets of Superheroes Secret Origins. But I'd like to read that book.
Legion
of Secret Origins.
Yes, the Legion of Secret Origins. It's a conceptual thing. It's a Grant Morrison title, I believe. It's coming soon from DC as part of the Multiverse miniseries that's never happening. Yes, Legion of Secret Origins. I still question if the Of Superheroes is part of the title or not. Yep. Anyways, thank you for the correction. Dropped by 41.35% from the sales of the first issue. However, the first issue had that Legion flight ring. So how many stores, how many readers ordered that for the little piece of plastic versus because they're actually interested in the title? Now, I thought it was a really good title and great job, so I hope people come back. But clearly, for the second issue, a lot of them didn't or were not expected to by the retailers. We may see some reorder activity on this book. I hope we do. Whereas you look at a title a couple of ranks up from that at 103, we've got the zero issue of Peanuts from Boom Studios, priced at $1, for 22,642 units. So about 200 units more. Now, obviously, the second issue is probably, or the actual issue number one, second issue published, though, is not probably going to be at that dollar price, probably a $3.99, given it's a Boom book. So I would expect to see a drop, but I'm willing to bet the people who picked this up were interested in the property, and that's obviously a better reason to do it. Another one priced at $1, a couple of ranks further down at 122, with the Flash Gordon Zeitgeist number 1. We reviewed that on the Weekly Comic Spotlight recently. 18,286 units, also priced at the dollar. That's going to be interesting to see how many people come back for that at the $3.99 price point. And that's going to be one that I think we're going to see what looks like a oh my god type drop, simply because people may have liked it, but not for the nearly $4 cover price. And it comes down to what do people consider a fair price on a book, and just how interested are they in stuff. You know, we're still seeing a solid drop on The Fear Itself Fearless at rank 63 with well over a third of the readers, 37.63% of the units dropping between the second and third issues. That's a huge drop for a second, third issue kind of...
That ships 2 books a month, right? So this is actually the first issue of the second month.
Yes. But it's going to be one of those to see kind of where that winds up. And again, these ones that ship more frequently than monthly have, again, kind of a stair-stepping pattern that we've seen before. But if you compare even... But really, between the first and the second issues, there was a less than 2,000 unit gap. So for it to have nearly a 20,000 unit gap between the second and third issue, that says something. You know, obviously the retailers had more time to figure out their ordering and stuff for that third issue than, well, how's it going to do between one and two? It's that information deficit that really comes into play at times. Now, yet another one we reviewed at rank 137 is Thunder Agents Volume 2, Number 1. It did 14,793 units. And Nick Spencer's a great writer and stuff, but this is one of those that when it starts at that level, I mean, that started below everything in the New 52. That's, to me, not a good sign. I think that's why it's a six-issue miniseries. Hopefully we'll see all six issues, but it's you know, unlikely I think we'll see a Volume 3 based on that. Would you agree?
I would agree. I also find it into the same area here, these Avengers Origins books, that these one-shots that they're coming out with.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they've saturated the desire of people because, you know, you start with Vision. I think Vision's the – oh, no, I guess Thor is a little higher up. You know, Thor is 15,179, and then you drop down Vision, 14,632, Ant-Man, 14,003, Luke Cage, 13,830, and Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, 13,777. I mean, that's not stellar sales.
Agreed.
I just, it's stuff to put out.
It's stuff to put out in time for collecting it in trade by the time the movie comes out. I think we're going to, Marvel has a habit of when movies are coming out, ramping up well in advance on the comic side so it's collected in trade so it can be at the bookstores, etc., both for the movie and the DVDs. And this is just more Avenger material for that purpose, I think. But yeah, they had to put some writers and artists on this, and did they really get a return on the investment there? Another one that I found kind of interesting is down at rank 171, the Dollhouse Epitaphs, number 5, the final issue there, 10,530 units. Really, that's down substantially from where it started at 34,598 units on the first issue. It makes me wonder if that would have been maybe better off to do just as an original graphic novel or direct-to-trade kind of thing.
But, I mean, they will put it out as a graphic novel, you know, at some point, I'm
sure.
Sure,
so, I mean, they get the double dip. They get the you know, thousands of, or about 1,000 units overall, I would think, between the five issues. And that's good, but it's interesting to see that kind of a drop-off on what I would think is a known quantity kind of going in. So I was surprised to see it that different. I would have figured it would have leveled out faster. Another one that's not too surprising how far it dropped, but I'm going to find very interesting to watch moving forward, is down at rank 202 with Legion of Monsters number 2. 8,600 units even. That's down 48.77% from the first issue. Granted, the first issue only did 16,787 units, but...
That's a series I would have bought if it was $2.99. You know, I was interested enough in the subject matter and the creators, but I just looked at it, and it's one of these $3.99 Marvel miniseries. And I was like, yeah, that's a little pricey.
Well, I think that explains why you were not part of that sales of the first issue. I think even at the $2.99, I probably still would not have bought it. The art did not look to my liking. But the fact that... really sight unseen, the retailers cut the orders by that much is very surprising and not a good sign at all.
It ended up in the same place, but a few slots down, the Six Guns, you know, kind of same kind of, it didn't drop as much, right?
Well, it dropped
13% drop, but it's not a 48% drop.
Dropping by 8,100 units versus 1,200 units.
Right.
Big difference. And again, the Six Guns.
But I mean, they both ended up around, you know, 8,000 something for their second issue.
Yes. But I think Six Guns, even though it sold less, is a healthier title because of the minimal drop between the first and second issue. You know, so that's one where, again, prognosis for long term future, I'd bet on Six Gun over Legion of Monsters. You know? Rank 218, we got Mouse Guard Black Axe number 3, 7,778 units. Down 11.21%. Again, second to third issue drop, pretty average. part I wanted to highlight was it's 40 weeks late. It should have been out in February 23rd. It came out on November 30th. So that sort of thing just kills story momentum for me. That really, really annoys me. I found it very interesting that Dynamite had five titles or five issues between Red Sonja and Queen Sonja this month. I mean, that's like one a week or whatever. That's just a lot. Issues 23, 24, and 25 of Queen Sonja and 58 and 59 of Red Sonja. Going towards, I think they oversaturate the market at times.
Were there previous issues that shipped late or something that they were just catching up or?
Let's see, the Red Sonja 58 shipped 37 weeks late. Should have been out in February. Was out on November 9th. Issue 59 of Red Sonja was supposed to ship at the end of March. It shipped on the 23rd of November. Queen Sonja, I don't have... No, I do have. That shipped 5 weeks late for number 23, 3 weeks late for 24, 1 week late for 25. So they were in a catch-up period. But still, I think they're... Well, really, actually, when you have a July, an August, and a September order code for Queen Sonja and a December 2010 order code for Red Sonja and a January 2011 order code for Red Sonja, they probably may have still some major catching up to do on that title.
Yeah.
That's, you get behind. And why weren't those orders for Red Sonja canceled? I mean, Chris and I talked about this some on the trade side. The rule, in theory, is after 90 days late or the end of the third month or whatever. I mean, quibble on the thing.
Yeah,
but after
that only applies,
months,
in my opinion, to little tiny publishers that Previews wants to, you know, brush off from the back half of Previews. The people who are in the top 5, 6, 7 publishers can pretty much flout that with impunity. I don't see their books getting canceled.
Well, and again, here's ample evidence of that. Dynamite's in the back half, but you're right. It's one of those bigger publishers. We just talked about that with the breakdown. It's running neck and neck with some of the big boys. So, you know, is that fair? No. Is that how it is? Well, yeah. Now, one of the ones that had a good upswing, I'm happy to see, was 229, all new Batman Brave and the Bold number 13. It was at 7,142 units, up 370 units, which is actually a almost 5.5% gain, 5.46% gain. I am one of those people who helped do that upswing for this issue. This is the one where they teamed up all of the different Robins across time and stuff for an adventure to go save Batman. I really enjoyed the issue. I thought it was great. Another 60% drop almost, ranked 251, John Carter of Mars, Warlord of Mars by Marvel, from the first to second issue, went from 15,552 down to 6,288. So
that's
lost to over 9,000 units.
And I still see issues of that sitting on the rack at my shop. So, and the fact that, I mean, of the first issue, which, you know, the fact that there were 15,000 of them only and there's copies unsold, yeah, it's probably telling you that this 6,000 is probably about the right level.
Oh, I wouldn't go that far.
If even, yeah, at best.
At best. We're going to see this go down further. This is, again, we've talked before about how nice it would be to see out of how many retail accounts Diamond has, how many did this go to? Because I'm willing to bet that would be very telling at this end of the list, where we would see some of these got to everybody and some of these got to next to nobody. You know, with, Futurama comics by Bongo at 257 doing 6,137 units. How many comic stores did that get into? And I'm willing to bet a fair number versus Mystic, number 4 from Marvel, which sold, 6,002 units. Probably didn't actually get into as many stores. And I think that's, again, a very important metric because it really tells us how big of a chance some of these items had. You know, are there some that are pervasive but slow sellers or low sellers? I mean, I would rather have a book in every store out there that consistently sells a couple of copies, enough for it to be worth the store having, versus one that does gangbusters in some stores and other stores you just cannot find to save your life. Obviously, you want to have something sell great in every store, but I mean, realistically, different stores, different audiences, and sometimes very different flavors as to the sort of things they gravitate towards. Some stores may be more into the Vertigo section, some more into the mainstream superhero or the indie or whatever. So,
another one that's good to note, Usagi Yojimbo at 275 went up 384 units. That's an 8% increase. That book sells criminally under what it should sell.
Oh, it does. It does. But also look at 284, rank 284, with the next issue of it, which did not sell as well.
Maybe was 141 like the 200th issue of Usagi that came out, and it got a little extra push, so...
That's exactly what happened. Because the 4,795 units for issue 142 is about 52 units above the 4,743 units of issue 140, which is actually, you know, again, the 47 upper 4,700s, pretty consistent for Usagi over the last couple issues, other than the 141, which got over the 5,100 thanks to it being the 200th, you know, full comic or whatever. This is a series that I agree is, I know I was a latecomer to it. It used to be selling up in the, you know, upper 8,000s, back, you know, in around 2000 or whatever. And it's just slowly lost a couple of sales here and there. Nothing major, but just kind of trickled down over time, which is unfortunate because, it's a really good title. Good enough that I have gone through, and I'm not big on the trades, as I think our listeners well know. I've picked up all of the trades from, I think, volume 8 on, and the reason I only started with 8 is the 2-volume slipcase hardcover covers the first 7. So I think I've got the full run now of Usagi in collected format up until when I picked it up in the monthly format. At some point, I'll find the time and actually go read those. He does some really fun stuff. It's a great all-ages title that I think is very satisfying to an adult, not the least bit kiddified, but also something I think you could put in front of a kid and not, you know, horrify them or anything of the sort.
There's nothing inappropriate in this book. This is one of the books that really deserves the title All Ages and not as, you know... A lot of times say all ages, and it's like a kid. It's written for kids. This is really an all ages book. I mean, it works on a number of levels, and an adult can read it, a kid can read it, a teen can read it. I mean, because there's enough action and stuff in it. It's really a well done book. It's meticulously researched. You know, even though it's in an anthropomorphic kind of funny animal world, all the history and events in it are completely accurate to the Edo period of Japan.
Yeah, which is part of what I find very fun and stuff. It's very respectful of the material. It's educational, you know. And it's a simple art style. Again, I think, like you said, it's multiple levels. A kid and a parent, I think, would get equal enjoyment out of it, maybe in slightly different ways, but still be reading the exact same story, if you know what I mean. It's one I would really like to see sell better. Couple other interesting things. Really, Bongo's titles overall are surprisingly consistent. Across their titles, they lost, I think, 567 units. They had about 5 or 6 things on the list this time around. But out of total sales of 29,435, I mean, they're averaging about a 2% loss on their titles. That's not too bad. So they've got, I think, a consistent readership. Boom Studios was really interesting to see kind of the high points and the low points. Peanuts, number one that we talked about, the 22,642 units, or actually number zero, I should say. That was his number zero, wasn't it? Let me double check. Yes.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Versus the rank 288 item, Seven Warriors, number one, which we reviewed on the Weekly Comic Spotlight, 4,710. So pretty big disparity there between... their top seller and their low seller. But again, pretty good high seller for a back half of previews thing. And again, Boom's one of the bigger ones there behind Dynamite. That Flash Gordon Zeitgeist number one was the top-selling title for Dynamite, Again, that dollar price, I think, helped a lot. The other thing at Image that I found kind of interesting is it's starting to look like Invincible may have leveled out and is starting to drop a little bit. I need to take a closer look at that, and I think that may be why Kirkman is starting to shake things up on that title in the coming issues.
I had a question about rank 277.
Okie doke.
Legend of Oz, The Wicked West. That's Big Dog Inc., but the publisher is listed as Big City Comics. Is that they're publishing it through some other imprint, or what's the deal?
No. This is one of the joys of the number crunching, and Chris and I actually got into a little of this discussion on the trade side. What happens is the list that comes out from Diamond does not have anywhere near the amount of information that I've got on this list that we're looking at here, which is an Excel file I put together, pulling in stuff from the solicitation form, the shipping lists, all that kind of stuff. But the problem is the information I get from Diamond, and I'm pulling up the top comics list. This is which rank again was this?
277.
277. There it is. It is listed as having a publisher of Big. The vendor is B-I-G. So that's all I got to go on. Now, my list of what publisher is what says that Big is...
Big City.
Probably Big City. Because I don't actually seem to have an entry I'm seeing for Big Dog Press. Sometimes they use the first three letters. Sometimes they use the acronym. That is indeed... and part of it is across time at one point, Big was Big City Comics. I hit this frequently with, I think it's IDW, can be IDE or IDW. So I've got two things that map into that. ACA can be Archie, Arcana, Archaea, or something else, depending. Moonstone can be MOO or MNS. And that's something that is part of why I've been trying to work on a revamp number crunching. To where instead of trying to decrypt this from a ever-changing three-letter vendor code that sometimes is different between the trade list and the comics list, to basically going off the order code back to the solicitation and pulling off the official publisher name there. But that's a revamp of the number crunching I've just had in the works for a while, and it's finding time to dive deep enough into that to actually finish that is challenging. But yes, that is incorrect. So,
okay.
Oops. My apologies to the guys at Big Dog Inc. They're doing some great work. I enjoyed that particular issue. If I'd caught that, I would have fixed that before I released the numbers to like CBR and stuff. So, mistakes happen. I'm working towards improving the process, like I said, but, because the Excel file we're looking at here, I've got data stretching out to column EN in Excel. We obviously don't use all of that every month. Most of what we use is in the first run of the alphabet up to really once we get past column AH, I'm not using a whole lot of the stuff to the right of that. But again, I'm pulling solicitation. I'm trying to collate a lot of information to where we have some more than just, hey, it sold X. But yeah, let's see. 50% of the list was at the $299 price point. 39% was at the $399 price point. That, of course, accounts for 98% of the list. The only thing with double-digit number of items on the list was the $350 price point, which had 24 items, accounting for another 8% of the list. Meaning, only 3% of the list had something other than those three prices. 1% of the list was at the dollar, 1/3% at $295, 2/3% at $499, 1/3% at $599, 2/3% at $799. What was that other $799 item? Not often we see stuff quite that expensive. It was Dark Horse Presents, of course. That makes sense. So, and then we talked about two of the dollar price. The other one was Dark Horse PC Cast of the or Cast House of Night. I'm not quite sure what the hell that is.
It's it's based on, I read the first issue of it. It's from Dark Horse. I'm not personally going to keep on reading it, but it's based on a series of young adult novels, I think, called House of Night.
Yeah, okay.
Series by PC Cast. And the thing that I think, if people read those novels, they would probably enjoy this quite a lot. As I found from reading the inside of the front cover of the first issue, it like dives in at some point between the scenes in the second of the novels, and I had a hard time following what was going on. So I'm not going to continue with it personally, but I think it would, you know, for people who are into that, they would follow it just fine.
Makes sense.
I wonder about that sometimes with a lot of these licensed properties that, you know, if the solicits and, you know, if the people, because certainly I can only imagine if you've got a successful young adult novel series, you know, it's got to be selling these novels well above, you know, probably 10 times, 20 times the numbers that are of this comic that went out, you know. And
if I would hope
if the people knew about it and went to a comic shop, you know, if there's some way of getting these people to know, hey, go to your comic shop and get a comic book based on your favorite, you know, novel series.
Yeah, I think some of these licensed properties have a much bigger audience than the comic is actually hitting. And I think part of that is there are a lot of people who don't go to comic stores, a lot of people who just really aren't interested in reading comics. But certainly I look at the sales of Buffy and a few other things right now, and I they've sold a lot more comics than that in the past. So again, there's a bigger potential audience. For things like those young adult books, you're right. It's like, do they even know there's this stuff to go check out?
Right.
Another thing I want to touch on real quick is Fear Itself, 7.1, 0.2, and 0.3, ranks 22, 25, and 31. The 0.1 did 60,557 units. The 7.2 did 58,001 units. And the 7.3, 54,899 units. Again, well below how the Fear Itself number 7 sold, but I would say probably better than these might have done as aftermath issues or some other numbering, but not remarkably so. So, I mean, to me, it's...
I mean, what is the last time when, like, they had, like, the... what was the last event? Civil War? No.
Secret Invasion.
Secret Invasion. I mean, because they did some kind of follow-up one-shots after Secret Invasion. Now, what do those things sell? Were they up in the 50,000 range, or were they more down like 20 or 30?
I was thinking so. When would one of those have sold? And I can pull up that month's numbers. That's the problem with doing those kinds of comparisons. It's like, well, what exactly was the issue, and when was it?
Let me do a quick...
I'm thinking they sold in the 50,000 range, but I'm doing that from memory and could be woefully mistaken.
Let me look at Secret Invasion here and see what we've got that would have been an aftermath kind of thing.
Because we had the Fallen Sun stuff.
Okay, so they had, well, I don't know.
Give me a month.
I'm kind of looking for what title I would consider to be an aftermath kind of. They have Secret Invasion Aftermath Beta Ray Bill. I think that would probably sell poor.
Yeah, I'm like, was he even in Secret Invasion? Certainly not a key player. See, it was Civil War that led into the Falling Sun. Secret Invasion, what spun out of that that would have been a follow-up?
That's what I'm trying to figure out.
That even have one? Maybe it didn't. I mean,
maybe it didn't. I know Civil War did.
Yeah.
So let's look at Civil War. You know, because they had that... you know, Death of Captain America stuff.
That's that whole Fallen Sun stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, Fallen Sun, because it was the death of Cap.
Yeah, it's probably a bad...
That's probably bad. That was like 133,877 units. So that sold really, really well. But that was also major news event versus just random epilogue.
I mean, I know they've had epilogues to these things, but...
They always name them differently is the problem.
Yeah, they name them something differently. And
the bottom line is these Fear Itself 7.x issues did all right. They didn't top the charts. They didn't tank. I don't
know.
Look
at January 2009, they've got a Secret Invasion Requiem. That's a, you know, Remembering the Wasp kind of thing, I think. That came out after.
That also, I thought, wasn't that mainly reprints?
Yes, it was.
Secret Invasion War of Kings one-shot that month did 47,466. Oh, and that Secret Invasion War of Kings one-shot did another 3,925 units of reorder activity in February there. Yeah, the only Secret Invasion thing I've got in February is that.
I guess the bottom line is that it doesn't appear that...
Ah, Secret Invasion Requiem, 63,455.
So just making them point ones does not appear to have given them tremendously better sales than anything else.
It really comes down to how integral does it appear to be to part of the story. You know, Secret Invasion Dark Reign did over 102,000, almost 103,000. That was the same month of Secret Invasion, but it was seen as this moves us to the next part of the story. Whereas the Requiem was seen as an epilogue, hence closer to the 63,000-64,000 units. All of these this time around, the 7.X issues, were seen as just epilogues. So we got the main story, now they're just, you know, cleaning up a couple of pieces. So, you know, again, I'm not really surprised where they sold, and yeah, I don't think it would have been that different, you know, a little higher, a little lower, depending how they named it. Probably a little lower, but not by much. So, anything else, or does that pretty much do it?
I think that does it for me.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you're in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. If you're a resident of some other space-time continuum, please limit any actions you may take to that alternate reality. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. Diamond Order Index only goes to 2 decimal places, and therefore there's a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. For months in which no issue of Batman or Detective shipped, Batman: The Battle for the Cowl was used instead. The title used as the key title is irrelevant. If you do not understand why, or do not believe this, please consider taking a refresher course on basic algebra. Math is fun, but only if you understand it. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Sell-through information is not currently available, and we limit our reporting to the available information. If, however, you enjoy fiction, please listen to this preview spotlight for our recommendations of upcoming comic books. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications that at least one retailer may have excessive amounts of empty shelf space with dust that needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold to Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month in question. The list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to the retailers for the month in question. More than 300 graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of the top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 100, 50, 25, or as few as 10 items on the list. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as we know, has not been invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic book, graphic novel, or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 300 graphic novels and collected edition lists are included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. For some strange reason, Diamond doesn't report on sales to competing distributors. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any item sold outside of Diamond's comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. We limit this report to the available data. If more data becomes available, we'd be happy to include it. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for. No amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is inapplicable in the alternate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there. I have neither the time nor the interest in engaging in pointless debates in this hypothetical reality. There are no guarantees of accuracy, reliability, completeness, or timeliness of any of the information given in the course of this discussion. We are human, and sometimes we make mistakes. We appreciate your understanding in this area. Any statements that may contain projections or other predictions about future events should be viewed as opinions that are subject to change as new information becomes available. Actual events may unfold in unexpected ways. As Doc Brown once said, the future is what you make of it. If any statements are contradicted or contested, the participants of the discussion may disavow any knowledge of those statements.